How's it going, everybody? Brian Elvers and Dave Meltzer here, Wrestling Observer Radio. It is March 7, 2019, figure4online.com/wrestlingobserver.com. A lot to talk about here today on the show, including news that just came out in Japan. Jushin Liger announcing that he'll be retiring at the Tokyo Dome next January. And between now and then, he hopes to wrestle all over the world. He is missing the New Japan Cup Tour. He'll be in Ireland. He hopes he will be able to wrestle at the G1 Supercard at Madison Square Garden. And that's the plan. One of the most legendary superstars of all time.
Yeah, in a lot of ways. I would call him the greatest. I used to always say Danny Hodge was the greatest junior heavyweight of all time, but I think Liger surpassed him just because of the longevity and just being a better pro wrestler. Really one of the greatest wrestlers of all time inside the ring, for sure. I mean, even to this day, the match he had today was tremendous. I actually thought when watching the match that they should have, I know that they wouldn't do it. I know that's not how they think, but I would have, you know, because they always think long term and they got long ideas for stories. But I thought that he should have won the title on the show today and then gone to Madison Square Garden and defend the title. Because I think that for the United States market, the idea of Jushin Liger coming in as champion, because he's of the guys on the roster, I mean, maybe not like the top guys now, but he still has a name in the United States from the WCW days and in the 90s and everything, that Liger coming in doing a title defense at the Garden would be like a real big deal. And then, you know, he could lose to, you know, whether it's Ishimori or somebody else, you know, soon after. Or even at that show, he could lose it at that show, and I think it would actually work. But they didn't do that. You know, I'm not sure who Ishimori is going to be wrestling. Actually, I am sure it's Dragon Lee.
Yeah.
But what should I say? So I think, because I thought like Liger and somebody, whether it was Dragon Lee or actually Liger and Dragon Lee would probably be a good match, and would probably be a great match. And, you know, they could have done that, but that's not how they think. And, yeah. I mean, when I was in Japan, there was definitely talk that Liger would retire. You know, they would do a Liger retirement show as one of the two Tokyo Dome shows. That way they would be able to sell, you know, one of them while the other one would probably have, like, the killer match. So, that, you know, it's certainly been talked about. Last year, I think they made it clear it was going to be his last Super Juniors. They did not make it clear that this was probably going to be, today's show was going to be his last shot ever at the title. But, you know, after he lost, I guess, is when they made the announcement he was retiring. So it would have been nice if he won, but, you know, and just got one last quick run. It is the junior title. You can kind of change directions a little bit on that and get right back to it with no real harm. It's not like it's the IWGP title. And you can do that with the IWGP title, too, but they didn't, and that's how it goes.
So we did have the 47th anniversary show with Jay White in the main event versus Will Ospreay, champion versus champion, no belts on the line. Jay White won.
That match was awesome. It was probably from what was amazing about it to me is it really this was weird because it was like the match was awesome, but the individual performances of White and Ospreay in some ways were better than the match itself. The reason is it's a weird thing because it's yet you had two non-Japanese in the main event, which is tough. I think that like this match in a different setting, because it was like it was really almost like a perfect match when it comes to psychology, you know, mental match, thought, moves being everything making sense. You know, you're watching it, and I was like in awe of the match, but the crowd was definitely with it, but they weren't like going over the top completely nuts like say like the Tanahashi and Kenny Omega match at the Tokyo Dome or like a Tanahashi Okada match. It wasn't that kind of a crowd reaction, but in certain ways as a technical match, I would say it was equal to those matches. Jay White, for people who knock Jay White, and I sort of could see why, he's really turned the corner this year. I mean, if you watch the match that he had with Okada at the Tokyo Dome, was as good a sub 15 minute match as you're going to see. And then the match with Tanahashi was fantastic, and this match was fantastic in a certain way, in the sense that Jay White, as far as doing his character, moves that make sense, you know, wasn't flashy, but technically very proficient. Technically, everything was on. But it's not even just the moves looked solid. It's the when they were done, and just how, you know, the story of the match. The story of the match was phenomenal. And Ospreay has modified his style, which obviously he needed to do. He did enough high flying and flashy stuff and quick stuff that you got Will Ospreay, but it was mostly his selling his core and White working over the core, and that was the story of the match, you know, from start to finish, with Ospreay taking some hellacious bumps, you know, just all the way through. And just his Ospreay selling was out of this world, and White's subtle viciousness was as well. I thought it was an incredible performance, especially when you consider the age of the two guys. I mean, Jay White is gonna be, you know, one of the great superstars of this business, and he, I guess as IWGP champion, you can almost say that he already is. And Ospreay is, you know, as far as guys that are working right now, I don't think there's anyone as good as Ospreay, night after night, match after match, who can go with any style, go with any opponent. And this time he had a great opponent. And then the other thing was, so the end of the show. So Jay White wins. I'm trying to remember what he did. There's so much going on at the end. So he went, Ospreay went for an os cutter, and the gimmick of Jay White is that he reverses your big move. Like he, at the Tokyo Dome, he reversed Okada's Rainmaker into the Blade Runner. In the Osaka match, he reversed Tanahashi's High Fly Flow into the Blade Runner. In this one, he reversed the os cutter into a power slam and then hit the Blade Runner to win. So it was like his storyline is now that he is the master scout. He scouts everyone's big moves and he learns counters, and when they least expect it, he hits the counter and beats them. It's a really unique thing. And they did a heel thing near the end where Ghetto distracted the ref, and Jay White gave him a low blow and then gave him a choke suplex, and then, you know, some other stuff until Ospreay got out of the Blade Runner and hit a power bomb. And Ospreay also hit this reverse 450 and would have got the pin, but he hesitated for a while because he had to sell his ribs that had been worked on the whole match. And that gave Jay White the chance to just barely grab the ropes before the count of three. You know, it's just a whole match filled with little things like that. You know, a couple of unique moves and all that, but just so then at the end, Ospreay has lost. He's down. Ghetto hits the ring. He's got a chair. He basically holds Ospreay. Jay White's going to nail Ospreay with a chair. And then Kota Ibushi, who was doing the announcing, ran in. So Kota Ibushi saves Ospreay, his rival, the guy who put him on the shelf. And then the whole Bullet Club runs in, you know, Fale, Tama Tonga, Tangaloa, Hikulea, Chase Owens, and they're all just beating down Ibushi and Ospreay. And then Tanahashi, Hirooki Goto, and Kazuchika Okada all run in and they make the save, and they leave, but then Jay White jumps on the apron and he's just teasing Tanahashi, Okada, Ibushi, Goto, and Goto. Ospreay's now in the corner. He's not standing there. And he's teasing them with the belt. So the idea is Tanahashi, Okada, Ibushi, and Goto are in theory like the big contenders in the New Japan Cup. And this whole post-match scenario probably did more as far as building anticipation for a New Japan Cup than any New Japan Cup in history, just with those four guys there. And then in the end, Ospreay, Ibushi goes to the corner, and they do the big handshake with Ibushi and Ospreay, and Ospreay's helped up. So now it's essentially in the ring, you've got Ibushi, Tanahashi, Okada, Goto, and Ospreay as kind of like the big new babyface group who are going to be like feuding with the heels, the Bullet Club, and whoever. But at the same time, even though they are going to be the new babyface supergroup, they're also all individually going after the New Japan Cup, and all were basically saying that I'm going to win, you know, doing, you know, just saying I'm going to be the one who wins the New Japan Cup. So you've got like those five different guys, and, you know, more likely than not, one of those five is probably winning, you know, more likely Okada or Ibushi, but they put the other ones in there in that same category and are putting them in the big feud. I could see the Bullet Club screwing Will Ospreay and causing him to lose the first round match with Fale, and getting him out of there to get him kind of in the, you know, against, make him stronger for that feud. But it's the key to all this is that Jay White lost clean, and when between the match story and the post match, Jay White is much stronger. But I mean, not Jay. I mean, what am I saying? Will Ospreay lost clean, and because of all that, the post match and everything, Will Ospreay is now a member of the super group, and he's now much stronger. Whereas, well, Jay White is also much stronger because he's now beaten, Okada, Tanahashi, and Okada, Tanahashi, and Will Ospreay all in a row by reversing their big moves. So that was the story of the main event. That was really the highlight of the show, and one of the best matches of the year. If it was in another setting, I would say it was a real contender for the second best match of the year. I can't say it would be better than Tanahashi and Omega. I think that one was a different league level, but this was up there with some of the other best matches this year. Like Pac and the Pac match with I think it was who did Pac wrestle that I don't even remember the one in the big Dragon Gate match that I saw a couple weeks ago was really, really, really phenomenal. But anyway, yeah, overall it was a fun show. I mean, every match was good. It was I would say it was New Japan's best show of the year after since the Tokyo Dome. You know, just solid stuff up and down the card. The matches you expected to be great were better than you would expect. So the opener was a 10-man tag, and this was the weakest match, but it was still a fun opener. It was Hikuleo, Chase Owens, Tonga, Tangaloa, Fale, over Ren Narita, Shota Umino, Ayato Yoshida, Toru Yano, and Togi Makabe. And I think it was Chase Owens used a package pile driver. I believe it was on Ren Narita. Might have been on Yoshida. But actually, it was Yoshida. And Chase Owens then cut a promo on Juice Robinson, who he's wrestling later this week when the New Japan Cup starts, which starts on Friday. And then it was Nagata and Yuji Nagata and Toa Hanare against Tomohiro Ishii and Yoshihashi. And Yoshihashi wasn't particularly great, but the other three are Hanare's got a lot of fire. He's real solid. And Nagata and Ishii, you know, they're Nagata and Ishii. What can you say? And they're, you know, building up a big singles match with those two. And whenever they were in the ring, whenever Ishii was in the ring, the match was really strong. And, finish was what you would expect. It was, Yoshihashi used a fisherman suplex and pinned Toa Hanare, but very good match. Then Suzuki, Takemichinoku, Desperado, Kanemaru, and Taichi against Toshikojima, Tiger Mask, Dragon Lee, Ryusuke Taguchi, and Tomoaki Honma. Another great match, or good match. But Dragon Lee and Desperado opened hot. Every time Dragon Lee was in, it was great. He was in early, he was in late, did running flip dive, all kinds of good near falls. Taichi pinned, which one did he pin? He did the Dodon, and I believe he pinned Taguchi with the Dodon, and Suzuki just destroyed everyone on the way back, all the young boys and everything. A lot of heat on Suzuki against Kojima because they're doing a singles match in the tournament. So that was where a lot of the emphasis, I guess, was on that, and just Dragon Lee being Dragon Lee. And then it was then started the big matches. It was Sho and Yo against Shingo Takagi and Bushi, and they won the title. Sho and Yo won. This was an excellent match. Sho and Yo were a great team. Bushi was having a good match. Takagi's awesome. And they did a tease where, the Bushi blue mist in Sho's eyes, and they hit the Rebellion on Sho, and everybody figured that was the finish. And just out of nowhere, Yo made the save, which was just great. I mean, now you got this ridiculous thing of Sho's got mist all over his face, and the referee's seeing it, but whatever. They don't call it DQ. And then the finish was Bushi went for his MX. Sho moved. Bushi went for a code breaker, and Sho basically blocked it. They turned it into the 3K on Bushi and got the clean pin. Then Ishimori defended the junior title against Liger, and this is like Liger's last great singles match of his career, and he delivered. It was excellent. Just a great, great match. You know, Ishimori's great anyway, but Liger really, he didn't do anything like crazy. He didn't do any dives. He did, he was very proficient. He did a brainbuster on the floor, which was the big spot where people thought, wow, maybe he's going to win the title on a count out. And Ishimori, I mean, he dove in at 19.9. Liger, he'd like to top rope Frankensteiner. Ishimori did a golden triangle. Liger did a fisherman buster. Shotei and a Liger bomb. He did the capo kick. Then lateral guillotine, Thez press. Ishimori used a Mystica into a crossface and rolled him to the center of the ring, and Liger tapped out. And then Ishimori cut a promo and started talking about who wants to face me in Madison Square Garden. And he said he wants somebody from ROH to come out and face him. And then Dragon Lee came out and told him that he's in fact not from ROH, he's from CMLL, but in fact he would like to challenge him in Madison Square Garden. And they were talking back and forth in Spanish because Ishimori knows Spanish. And it was funny because it was actually really the announcers for the show were Kevin Kelly, of course, and then they had Don Callis and Colt Cabana. And Colt Cabana has this like really cool, quick, subtle, dry sense of humor. It's like he's saying something funny, but you know, unless you pay attention, you're missing it. And so, you know, in the promo, they're talking Spanish, and you know, they have a Japanese translator, but they're not talking Japanese, and none of the three know Spanish. But you can still pretty much, even not knowing Spanish, you can kind of tell what they're talking about. And they mentioned Madison Square Garden, and Don Callis goes, and then like Cabana goes like something like, you know, well, what did he say? And he just goes, he wants the match in Madison Square Garden. And Cabana goes, wow, you really do know Spanish. It was really just so like subtly funny. Then it was Tanahashi, Okada, and Goto against Naito, Evil, and Sonata. And Goto did this really cool Billy Robinson leg cradle submission to pin Sonata, with the idea of getting, you could tell from the last segment, the deal is Goto has won the New Japan Cup more than anyone. So even though Goto has not been pushed, you know, for the last couple of years as a top tier guy. You know, it's kind of like a middle guy who gets some big matches but always loses to the top guys. You know, go to, you know, he did get to the G1 final with Kenny Omega a couple of years ago, but he's the idea is, since he's won more New Japan Cups, they're kind of like making him like, you know, the guy who's really good at the New Japan Cup. So they gave him this big win and put him in the, you know, so people will, they pushed him in a way to make people think that, hey, you know, he can go and win this thing. And, you know, this match was really, really good. You know, look at the talent. I mean, it's not like these guys were just doing their, you know, big show, killing it, drop dead match. They were, you know, all working really good. Tanahashi does like they work over Tanahashi's knee. He does the greatest coming off the ropes knee, you know, limping thing that I've ever seen in my life. And he didn't do it at the start of the match. He was only doing it after they worked the knee, so it's a work. It's not a shoot. I mean, he does the absolute greatest running. Nobody I've ever seen anyone run the ropes while selling a knee better than Tanahashi. There's a lot of things like never seen anyone do better than Tanahashi, but, you know, Okada, you know, everything's good, does the drop kick. You know, you get, you know, it's all action when he's in there. Naito and Okada do some really great stuff. Evil's, you know, the usual evil. Sonata does his cool athletic stuff. I mean, you know, just a really fun match. And then Goto and Tanahashi and Okada all said that they did promos, all said they were going to win the New Japan Cup. And then Naito, Ibushi's doing commentary during this whole show. Naito comes and goes face-to-face with Ibushi because there is a Naito-Ibushi match in just a couple of days in the first round of the tournament. So, and the main event was the Jay White and Will Ospreay match. So very, very strong, fun show. At no point in any match, I don't think it ever got slow or boring. It's like one of these three plus hour show, didn't go too long. No match was too short. Most matches, I'd say the key matches, the Ospreay match went 29 minutes, but I thought that every match, like when I was watching it, ended at the right time. I didn't feel any of them were too long or too short. It was just a nice booked, a little over 3 hour show. There you go.
All right, yesterday in the show, you were talking about Tommaso Ciampa and WWE Today announced an anterior cervical fusion, which he'll be undergoing today.
So that's a surgery where they go through the front of the neck, not the back of the neck.
So he's going to be out for a long time. And
six months or longer, probably.
Yep, so they got to figure out something with barely any notice to get a championship match for...
Yeah, they've known about this. Although I guess as far as knowing that Ciampa wasn't going to be able to work, I think that's...
Yeah, it's a big deal. They got a championship match we got to make for.
Well, yeah. Well, you got to have a new chance. Yeah, you probably have to do a tournament for the title, is what I'm thinking. So, I mean, I guess it gives them a lot of stuff that they can do at the TVs next Wednesday, because you can, you know, however.
Well, they only have, 4 weeks left. So you either got to do like a.
Yeah, you got to do a tournament.
Super quick tournament.
Yeah, with the finals at the takeover. That's how I would do it. I wouldn't just do a match. I would do a tournament. Get, you know, 8 guys.
Believe it or not, I'd just do a match. I'd do a ladder match, top 6 contenders, playoff last year's ladder match. This time, the championship's on the line.
You could do that, but to me, that like when you have your main title and you're doing a ladder match, it really cheapens the title. I think tournament works a lot better. But, you know, they are rushed on time. But I think, look, if you've got 3 weeks of TV, you can do 4 singles matches week one. You can do 2 singles matches week two. The 2 winners go to takeover, and that's a perfect deal.
I don't know. I mean, you could do it. It just seems like it's just like a tournament. You know what I mean?
Well, this title's vacant.
I know, but it's like this is
what should you do if you have a title vacant?
If they had more time, I would do more to build something up. But with 3 weeks, it's like.
I just explained how you do the 3 weeks. You can do it in 2 weeks with no problem.
You could do that. I think a ladder match is more spectacular and more exciting, and it was the best match. It was one of the 2 best matches of the weekend last year. Everybody remembers it. It was a 5-star match.
I think you could do it. There's nothing wrong with doing it, but if you do that, I mean, I guess you have to rearrange your card because so many of the guys that were going to be on the Takeover show in other matches. I mean, almost all the top guys, with the exception of Gargano and Ciampa, were already booked in other matches. If you do the tournament, you can get them out of there, and they can do the matches that were scheduled. And, you know, you could probably go with Adam Cole and Johnny Gargano in the finals, and they'll kill it. And, you know, whatever you need, if Johnny Gargano is going to the main roster, then Adam Cole can win and take Adam Cole out of the match that he was going to be in, which I think was going to be a three-way. And you can go with, Velveteen Dream and Matt Riddle, I think, in a singles match for the North American, something like that. I think that's kind of the direction they were going. So, you know, you put all those guys in, then you've got Velveteen Dream has no opponent, or he's going for the main title and he's in a ladder match. And then you've got to add new matches because, you know, your contenders, you can't put Ricochet and Black in because they're going against the War Raiders. So you got to get, I mean, I guess there's other guys, but you got to basically rearrange. You're going to, you know, if you're going to do a multi-person ladder match, you pretty much have to have Riddle in there, and you probably should have Cole in there. So then Velveteen Dream has no opponent. So you got to gut your, you know, if you're going to do the ladder match, and it's not, you know, you can do it, but you're gutting your whole card. Whereas my way, you can keep your card and just do, you know, move Adam Cole out of a three-way into a singles match. And, you know, that's, and you get.
I mean, you're gutting the card, but at the same time, we've got two matches so far. If you add the ladder match, that's three matches. They only do five matches on the actual takeover. So that's only two other matches you have to put on the card.
Yeah, you have to put two, but you'd leave Velveteen Dream with no opponent after all the TV to build him up.
Yeah, he's in the ladder match.
So then you've got to add, you've got to add that match. You got to take away the Velveteen Dream match with Riddle. So you get, you can do it, sure. Then you got to add a new match that you didn't have planned. Although they got the talent, they can add another match. That's not really that big of a deal.
So the tapings are coming up here, what, Thursday?
Wednesday. Wednesday the 13th are the tapings. And, so they got to do what they got to do. And so that's, you know, why the Gargano-Ciampa thing was dropped on the main roster, because he couldn't go. I don't know, you know, again, I have my theories about what happened, but when you go to the emergency, got to get the surgery done right away thing, you know, it wasn't, you know, he was always going to get the surgery, but it was going to be in April. So I think that it must have gotten, I mean, there's no way around it. It must have gotten real bad to have to do this, because, you know, the guy clearly wanted that blow off with Johnny Gargano on the Takeover show.
Not just him. It was a year. It was over a year in the making, this storyline.
Yeah. And if he's out for a long time, I mean, it's going to be tough, because I don't see them going to that on the main roster. And it's time for Gargano to, I guess they could keep Gargano, you know, in a way, I just assume they keep Gargano in NXT, because I really believe that they're going to blow it with him on the main roster. So, and then he can come back and do it. But, you know, it's always tough, because you come back from neck surgery, and yeah, he's a great heel and all that, but it's going to take the edge off him as a heel coming back from neck surgery. I mean, he'll, you know, he can still be a heel, but it'll lose, you know, you can do it, but yeah, it's 6 months, and yeah, you got to start from scratch in a lot of ways, and who knows, you know, what'll happen then. And who knows what happens in 6 months? Gargano could get hurt, you know, with the injury rate of this company, you know, just, you know, or any company at this stage of the game when you're working this many dates. I mean, the injury rate's just high. And that's one of the things that it's just you almost have to prepare for that, you know, when it comes, and it's one of the reasons why, you know, there's two reasons we don't have long-term programs. One is that guys keep getting hurt, and the other is that the guy in charge keeps changing his mind. But when people say, why don't you have long-term programs, there actually are two reasons, not one.
So WrestleMania is expected Tampa, Florida next year. Second time in Florida in 4 years.
Yeah, first time ever in Tampa, though. You know, Raymond James Stadium. They're going to the press conference tomorrow. And, you know, kind of been known for a little while, you know, not that long, maybe. I mean, I heard it a couple of months ago, you know, Tampa and Minneapolis were the two names cities I'd heard for the last several months, but it actually probably wasn't broken until about a week ago. that it was going to be Tampa. And yeah, they're doing the press conference tomorrow, and you know, it's cool. I've been to Tampa for shows before. I always like that area. It's April. You could be worse. It's better than Minneapolis in April. Probably better than New York in April, though New York is you know, a lot better as far as business goes. I mean, these shows in New York are just doing it, you know. The big shows in New York are all, they're all going to sell out. I mean, as far as the big stuff, maybe not SmackDown, but everything else, you know, is going to be sold out. And because, you know, whereas in these other markets, it's like New Orleans, it was a lot tougher. You know, in all the markets, it's a lot tougher than New York. New York legitimately sold out WrestleMania instantly, whereas these other markets, you know, WrestleMania doesn't even always sell out.
So the SmackDown rating this week, 2.155 million viewers, basically the same as last week, 77% of Raw. So it's looking like the big dog's moving some numbers.
Yeah, I credit the Raw number to Reigns because it's not carrying over to the next day. SmackDown is at a level. It's not a great level. So SmackDown was down with every... The only reason the number was equal to last week was because the over 50 viewers were up, but every other demo was down. Not by a lot, just a little. So it's essentially like, you know, the same as last week. There was an NBA game. It was actually the late game, so it didn't even go against them. But it did like similar numbers as far as viewers, and it was interesting because SmackDown draws, if you have the same number of viewers, SmackDown will draw more women, but the NBA will draw more men. And let me just see. I think that let me just see, because the NBA was in a terrible time slot to draw teenagers because it was a 10:30 game. And what is it with teenagers? Let me just see. Okay, the NBA was 17% lower with women 18 to 49, 39% higher with men, 31% lower with teenage girls. Now, here's this. Think about this. SmackDown is on from 8 to 10 p.m. The NBA game that I'm talking about was on from 10:30 a.m. to 1 a.m. In that time slot, 10:30
p.m.
10:30 p.m. to 1 a.m., okay? The NBA game was 77% higher with teenage boys. So... that's interesting. I wouldn't think that if you would ask me.
The Fastlane show, we have seven matches and a pre-show match. Rey Mysterio and Andrade wrestling on the pre-show.
Yeah.
The matches, that's the one they chose for the pre-show?
Well, of all the matches, in their minds, it's not. There's no championship. And I don't want to say it's the least significant because... to me, the least significant is the Asuka match, but they're not going to put Asuka and Mandy Rose on the pre-show. Although we got three women's matches out of seven, which
it's funny when you say that. I mean, if Rey and Andrade weren't on the pre-show, I mean, you'd pretty much say they're not putting Rey and Andrade on the pre-show. But in fact, they did.
I would say that. I would say it didn't surprise me at all. I think that in a way, I don't want to say it's better, but I don't think it's so much worse, because knowing them, they might, like, if they run the main show, they might like cut them to 5 minutes, and at least on the pre-show, you know, they're probably going to give them like 15, you know, 12. So they're not going to have the opportunity to have a 20 minute killer match that we know they can have, that they've already had. It won't be as good as their SmackDown match. And you've got the situation where, well, it's Cleveland. I think Cleveland will be an early enough arriving crowd that it won't be the crowd arriving in the middle of their match. So I think that they're going to do real well as far as a pre-show match goes. So it's not too bad, really, for them.
Well, I hope you're right. I picture like 8-9 minutes with a commercial in the middle.
Well, okay, that's the one thing that you're right about.
You're guaranteed to have that commercial in the middle.
Yeah, you know, no matter how long, whether it's 8 minutes, I think that they'll go 12 or 13, but absolutely they're going to have that commercial, which is so needless because the commercial is for the frickin' pay-per-view show. and the and you're watching it on the network that you're already subscribed to. And I hate that. I mean, now, granted, they do put the pre-show match on other forms, so there is a reason, okay, for that. But they could easily do, like, a split feed. This isn't really that difficult.
Not even that. Like, even if we are talking about other platforms, what platforms are we talking about? How many people are really watching that compared to people that are actually watching it on the network because they're already getting the pay-per-view? It's got to be, like, 95% of the people are watching it on the network.
You know, I don't know. That's a really good question, and that's one of those things that they'll never, you know, that the few people who know the answer will never give it out.
I mean, how many times do we ever hear from someone going, you know, I was watching this on such and such a platform? Never.
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 I've never heard it. I know it exists, though. But, so, and you're, and you know what? You're probably right. It probably, if I'm going to guess, it's probably like 95 or 98%. So, but even if it's 70%, and there actually are like say 100,000 people watching it elsewhere who are not network subscribers, and there should be a commercial to subscribe to the network because of that on that. You can have like a split feed where this feed that goes to Facebook or wherever you have the commercial, but then when you're watching on the WWE network, you do not need a commercial to subscribe to the network that you're already subscribing to at that point and take 3 minutes away from this match, especially, you know, I mean, like sometimes, you know, when they do the pre-show match and they do that, it's like, all right, whatever, who the hell cares? It's nothing. This is a 2-star match anyway. So it's like, what does it even matter? But in this specific match, yes, I'm probably going to despise that commercial and just go, why the hell are we having to watch this commercial in the middle of this match? And there is no good answer, again, for that. So, anyway, maybe someone there will listen to me and say, you know what? There is no good answer.
The Usos versus The Miz and Shane McMahon in The Miz's hometown with The Miz's father at ringside. Tag team titles on the line.
So is Miz going to, like, turn on his dad and all that?
I figure Shane's turning on Miz's dad and on The Miz.
Okay. Yeah. I guess. Okay. I could care less about Shane as a heel, but...
You talk about Shane turning heel all the way back to November. Like,
well, he was planned to do so in November, and then they just didn't do it.
Well, here you go.
They just didn't do it. Yeah, so... Yeah. So that means... Well, it could mean Miz and Shane at WrestleMania.
Good. I'm fine with that. I'd rather they wrestle each other.
I guess. I don't care one way or the other. I'm not going to get excited about it either way.
Well, if our options are The Miz versus Shane, or Shane versus Samoa Joe, and Miz versus Daniel Bryan or whoever, I'd prefer they wrestle each other.
Well, given those options, sure. I wonder who the Usos are going to go against at WrestleMania if they retain. I guess they could probably do, you know, we're going to have a night of multiple person. You know, I did hear that a couple weeks ago, that there's going to be, that even though the main event's going to be multiple person match, we're probably going to get a lot of multiple person matches just so everyone gets on the card. But, yeah, so we'd probably have, what, the Hardys and who are the other teams? The Bar, you know, and I don't know. You know, I don't know what happens with Black and and Ricochet, you know, but yeah, I mean, they certainly on Tuesday built up an 8-man tag. It's looked like to me. So
Daniel Bryan, Kevin Owens for the WWE title.
Yeah. Well, we know that WrestleMania is going to be Daniel Bryan and Kofi Kingston. So that sort of like traps you into, you know, a finish where you're not building up a rematch because they're moving on. So, you got that. And Daniel Bryan shouldn't lose the championship. So, but they may have a really good match. And there's every reason to believe they'll have a really good match.
Got Bayley and Sasha versus Nia and Tamina for the SmackDown or the WWE Women's Tag Titles.
Yeah. That match, you know, Bayley and Sasha are going to work really, really hard.
I put this one on the pre-show.
Yeah, but they won't because it's the new belts. But yeah, I would too. I would put Asuka and Mandy Rose on the pre-show. I really would, of all of them, because I you want to get the new belts over, And I don't think anyone really, you know, like, I think that they want, because Nia Jax is in there, the idea that this is like a real serious championship match. And I don't know that anyone's really buying Mandy Rose and Asuka as a real serious championship match. Now watch them put Mandy Rose over, but whatever.
We got The Shield versus Baron Corbin, Drew McIntyre, and Bobby Lashley.
This is a really interesting one when it comes to booking, because normally you would go in there and look at this and go, Dean Ambrose is leaving, everyone else is staying, so beat Dean Ambrose. But I just can't see, I could not, if I was booking, I could not even fathom the suggestion of Roman Reigns losing his first match back. In fact, if I was in a meeting and somebody suggested Dean Ambrose loses the fall since he's leaving, I probably wouldn't get too mad. I would go, yes, under normal circumstances, you're right. And then I would probably fire him, because there's, to me, it's like, there's certain things that to me are open and shut, and you don't beat Roman Reigns first night back after this. You know, it doesn't even matter that it's the one and only Shield thing. I mean, that's nice and all well and good, but if it was like a normal match and Roman and the Shield got back together, but Dean Ambrose was leaving, I'd beat Dean Ambrose for sure. But circumstances have changed that.
Okay, The Revival versus Aleister Black and Ricochet and Chad Gable and Bobby Roode.
I hope that they're put in a position. I hope they open the show and are just given a lot of time, because there is great, great potential in this match. But if it's put on late, I think that people will crap all over it, because if you put it on late on a long show, by then people will just be wanting the main event. So this really depends on positioning more than anything. I mean, as far as the work itself in the match, it will probably be outstanding. I mean, The Revival and Roode and Gable are killing it every night at house shows. The Revival are a great team. Chad Gable is the most underrated guy. You know, I guess you could say Masquerade. I mean, Metalik, but Metalik isn't even allowed to show it, which is a different issue. But Chad Gable may be the most underrated guy in the whole company, and Ricochet and Aleister Black are fantastic. So, I mean, this really, if you open the show with this and give them about 17 minutes, the show will open by they may not open like the first 3 or 4 minutes hot because of the star power situation. But I think that when they get to about minute number 12, the place is going to be on fire.
And then, of course, we got the Becky Lynch-Charlotte match. Becky wins. She's added to the match at Mania. If not, she's out.
Yeah. So, it's a different match than the last one, because the whole match is going to be Becky selling her knee. But
she's on crutches, for crying out loud, on Tuesday.
I know.
This is ridiculous.
Well, she better sell her knee. If she didn't sell her knee, I'll be pretty upset.
Well, I mean, she's going to sell her knee, but, I mean, it's just preposterous. Coming out here on crutches on Tuesday, she's going to have a match on Sunday. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, you're right. It's completely ridiculous. It's completely ridiculous. And you know what else is bad about this? Is they, well, of course, it's WWE. This is not like another company where, like, logic and consistency has anything to do with it. They just do whatever they want. And it's just like creative, you know, they've trained the audience that none of it matters. And you have creative license to do anything, no matter whether it makes sense or not. So it doesn't matter against, but it's like this whole thing of she's on crutches and she's cleared to perform is like, how many times in the next year is someone going to get hurt either for real or in a work and not be able to perform when they want to perform in storyline? You know, like say like Becky Lynch, you know, like Becky Lynch, when she legitimately got that concussion. Now it's like she's going to look, you know, if someone gets a concussion before a big match and they can't perform, it's going to look like completely stupid, because how could you not let them go when you just let a woman who's on crutches do a match 5 days later? You know, how could like someone with any kind of an injury, you know, why don't they just sign a hold harmless agreement? I mean, we've established now that you don't have to be medically cleared after years and years of being taught that you have to be medically cleared. Including Becky Lynch, not only for reals, but for fake in this last angle. All this time she wasn't medically cleared, she can't be in the match and this and that. You got to go see the doctor. And now our angle has just said, oh, you really don't have to do that either.
Yeah. It's been overcomplicated. I think everyone would agree with that.
Yeah. Well, someday at some point, maybe I'll, maybe it'll come out as to it. Yeah. It's just put it this way. Things have changed every week to make this much more difficult than it needed to be. I'll just say that. God. What else could I say?
Sounds like a lot.
Well, it just changes every week. You know, I mean, it's essentially changes that screwed everything up that didn't have to be made, but were spur of the moment because they just were. That's all I could say.
Well, the Roman Reigns special, any other notes on that?
Yeah, I thought it was pretty cool. The one thing that so he talked about basically the whole situation. So the thing was, is that, and I'm guessing this is the week before Providence, because he missed those house shows on that weekend. So he shows up, and I guess he was feeling a little bit fatigued, but he didn't tell anyone. But he did note that he'd been feeling a little bit tired. And then he was told he'd taken a blood test for whatever reason, maybe because he was feeling tired. He just said he took a blood test, and they told him, we want you to take another blood test because we have questions about this first blood test, so we need a second blood test. Take the second blood test. So then he goes to TV. This is in October, which I'm going to guess is October 15th, although they didn't say the date. And Dr. Amon, he shows up, and Dr. Amon needs to see you. And it was said in a way where, I guess it was Mark Carano, and he actually said this. This is actually pretty funny the way he said it. It's just like, because it just reminds me of a lot of situations where, you know, it's like Mark Carano needs to see you, and it's like, well, okay. And it's kind of like, I'll go see him whenever I feel like, I'm a star, I'll go see him whenever I feel like seeing him, I'm in no rush. But it was like, it's about, you know, Dr. Amon, and the way it was said, it's like, oh, I better go right now. And then he's in this room, and there's like a bunch of different people, and essentially they tell him that his white blood cell count was off, and with his past history, while they don't know what he has, they're pretty darn sure they think they know what he has, and by the next, you know, maybe more with more tests they did, and it was the beginnings of leukemia. They got it early. He took a pill, and he didn't say the name of the pill, but I'm sure it's the one that I talked about in the Observer last week. And you know, he said that he did have side effects, which were he had arthritis in his feet and his hips, which he said that when I'll take arthritis in my feet and hips anytime over radiation treatment, which in fact is the case, and it controlled it, and he was tired for a little while. And then he felt better, and now he's back. The thing was, okay, and this was weird to me, because, I mean, it's you know, and this is the one, so I'm going to say this, and I'm going to get all these people really upset, but it's just the reality of it. So he says that he couldn't get off the couch for months. He was so tired. He was, you know, when he's taking the treatment, he's lying on the couch all day. He couldn't really play with his kids, you know, things like that. The thing is that, like, how did he do that movie if he was lying on the couch for months? He was only gone for 4 months, and the movie took a couple of months. So it wasn't that much time.
Well, I mean, did he say that he did the movie for months?
But he did.
So we know that he did the movie for months.
That movie was 3 months of shooting.
Well, sure, but there's a lot of movies where there are 3 months of shooting, but you're not necessarily on set for 3 months, depending on your role.
That's right. He may have been... Yeah.
He could have been there for 3 weeks there at the end.
It's possible, but he never brought up... The whole key, what I was going to say about the special is that no matter what, on the special, it was... He never did a movie.
Hmm.
It was never said. It was like he was exhausted for months, Then he got better, and then he came back. There was no movie. There was no intermediate period. He felt better, and then he got cleared, and now he's back. So he never brought, which I thought is like, we know he did a movie. So I don't know why they didn't say it, but for whatever reason, you know, and obviously there is a reason, you know, but they, that was very clearly left out of this thing. So that was the one deal.
I don't know. Maybe they just figured if we tell people he's making a movie, we're going to have these weird people thinking it's fake.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, when those pictures came out on the movie set, there were definitely people that thought it was fake, even though it was not.
It's not fake. And the look, the disease that he had, CML, I mean, and it is serious, you know, I mean, but it's not like, you know, like I mentioned, there was a NHL player who had the same thing he had in the 2007 season who did not miss one game. He played every game while on this. And hockey is a pretty damn demanding sport. So everyone's different, you know, and he didn't take, he actually said the pill was oral chemotherapy, but it really, I don't think it was, you know, because the pill that I was talking about, which is a new pill, and that's what he said, he didn't give the name of it, like I said, but, you know, like this is usually, they usually don't use, you know, the treatment of this is usually not chemotherapy or radiation. So it's not that harsh. You know, it's the pill that he took that, you know, yeah, you're going to have a couple, you're going to have some side effects and it's no fun, but, you know, muscle memory and stuff, once you get your strength back and go back to the gym, which, you know, he had a personal trainer the whole time he was in Hawaii doing the movie. He had a personal trainer with him. So he's going to get his body back. You know, that's, you know, I mean, you can get, geez, I mean, I would say, you know, I mean, everyone and everything's different. Every injury is different and every illness is different. But what he had, put it this way, his situation is not the slightest bit inconceivable with what he had, not even the slightest. It was when I was talking to doctors about this and they presumed it was CML that he has because of his past history, and I presumed it. I was told, you know, the basic situation and that he's going to wrestle again, and probably in a couple of months, and he's not going to be losing his hair, and he's not going to be losing that much weight, and he's, you know, he's going to be probably going to be fine, is what I was told. Probably. There is always the chance that it could be really bad. There was absolute risk, and he had every reason to be scared. When you got three kids and you're 33 years old and you've got leukemia, that is no joke. But most likely, what happened was exactly what happened. It's absolutely consistent with what I was told in October.
All right, we got a UFC show coming up this weekend. Yet another UFC on ESPN+. Derek Lewis, Junior Dos Santos is the main event.
Yeah, let me get to the lineup. So, yeah, it's an earlier show, which is cool. Yeah, Derek Lewis, Junior Dos Santos, Curtis Millender and Eliazu Zaleski Dos Santos. We got two Dos Santoses in the top two matches. That's confusing. Nico Price and Tim Means, Ben Rothwell and Blagoy Ivanov, the guy who was nearly stabbed to death many years ago. Benny Eldariush and Drew Dober, Omari Akhmedov and Tim Boach. It is, it's from Wichita, Kansas. First time UFC's ever been in Wichita. And it is a show. That's all it is. I'm trying to find an excuse not to watch it so I can go and see Jun Akiyama in San Francisco that same night. I don't know if I may do that. I don't know. We'll see. I mean, it'll be the first time that I have seen Jun Akiyama live in, golly, let me think. I couldn't even tell you how long. I don't think he's ever wrestled in the United States. Well, last time I seen Jun Akiyama live, what am I talking about? I'm getting like freaking ridiculous on this. The last time I saw Jun Akiyama live was January the 3rd. So it would be, you know, but before that, it would have been decades probably.
You just talked yourself out of going to see Jun Akiyama right there.
Nah.
You saw him in January. There's a UFC on ESPN Plus this weekend.
It's UFC on ESPN Plus. It's not even a big show. So
I'd go see Jun Akiyama.
Yeah. We'll see how it turns out. I don't know. I got to count ballots still.
Oh, maybe June can help you.
Yeah, and I don't even have the issue done. I won't have the. I'm way behind on the issue. This stuff. I mean, I'm just. I got to change this thing between everything that I got going. I cannot keep up. It just can't be done.
Well, let's do some quick mailbag here. Did Bundy have a SAG card since he did a few movies and TV roles?
I have no idea. I think there's a chance that he did though.
First says, did SmackDown witness a notable decline in viewership in 2005 after John Cena was moved to Raw? He was clearly the biggest star in the company at the time. Felt like the moment when WWE really turned SmackDown into the B show following the brand extension in 2002.
I don't remember. I'd have to look that up. I don't remember if there was an immediate decline. I know the SmackDown ratings generally during that period were declining. But I don't know, like, if it was, like, the Cena thing increased the decline or not.
This person here says, if Rousey had not gone to WWE, where would she have made more money, UFC or Hollywood?
Well, she was done with UFC. I mean, that's just how she is. So, it was Hollywood. And I just, you know, I don't know how much work she'd have gotten in Hollywood long term. She's not a great actress. She was famous enough to get work. There was a period, like in 2003. So in 2003, I remember this is like right after the Carmouche fight, I think it was. And I had a friend who was there at this place where all these Hollywood execs were there. And Dana was there. Dana White was there with Ronda Rousey. And everybody just fawned all over her like they said, like you couldn't even believe it. Everybody wanted her. They just thought she was going to be pretty girl who can fight. You know, she's very telegenic. She's super over. Everyone thought she was going to be this big marketing thing. And that's, you know, at the beginning, everybody did think she was going to be this big, you know, star. But it didn't happen. But she wouldn't be doing UFC. She wasn't going to stay. She doesn't lose well. I mean, if she was different, she might not have been as good on the front end. What made her great is the same thing that made her not lose well. That's just how she is. And she was going to, yeah, at that point, if she didn't go to WWE, she was going to do movies. And if it didn't work out in movies, you know what? It didn't matter. She's set for life. She's got money. She's not a big spender. She's happy on her farm. And money will be of no concern to her, I'm going to guess. I mean, you never know, inflation, and she's young and all that, but I think she's in a position where money will never be a concern for her.
Person here says, do we actually know why Brock threw the belt at Vince after the Roman Reigns match at Mania? The network special showed the footage, but did not really give any context.
Either one of two things. Either Vince and Brock were working everyone because everyone was furious, or Brock was just trying to show that he's Brock and he's the alpha and nobody else is. And it could be either of those two. I don't know which one it is, because if it was Vince and Brock working everyone, Vince isn't going to tell them. The way it went down, I mean, my impression was that it was perhaps that work thing that I said, but nobody else believes that. Everyone else believes it's just Brock showing that he's Brock and he can do whatever he wants. And because he's Brock, he can get away with it. And in real life, that's the situation. So those are your two options.
This person here says, do we know if Ciampa received a main roster contract when he came up? Does this affect his surgery in any way?
I don't know. I don't know that. It wouldn't, I mean, it's not going to affect his surgery. I mean, if he's on the main roster or he's, he's going to get his downside. Like if his downside isn't that high, then that's not that good. And that happens to a lot of guys, you know, when they get hurt, if they have like nuts, but the NXT guys, Their downside is what they get paid anyway. It's not like they get bonused when the house is big or anything like that. They're on their downside. You know, is this going to cost him money if he was on the main roster for the next 6 months? You know, yeah, for sure. But that's the breaks of the game. You know, it's not, we're still not at that period where, you know, it's like other companies or any other sport where, you know, if you're injured, you get paid your normal salary. I think, you know, WWE is way, way, way behind the times in a lot of ways, this being one of them. I think, in especially now, with as profitable as the company is, and the fact that they're not living and dying on house shows and pay-per-views like they were for most of their history, there's no reason to have the salary payoff structure the way it is. And they know that. And then I've even heard, like, two, 3 years ago, I heard them say, you know, we're going to, it's you know, it's probably going to change to, you know, everyone being contracted for a certain amount of money, and that's what they get paid. And it won't be like, you know, $1 million for top guys on their contract, but then they can still make $2 million or $3 million, or, you know, they get super hot, they can make however much, right? It'd be like, you know, you'd get the merchandise, you know, would not be part of the downside, would not be part of your contract, but your contract wouldn't be like, you know, you wouldn't, I mean, you know, the idea of getting bonused for pay-per-views when you don't have pay-per-view anymore, it's kind of like, you know, it's like the, you know, they created a system that was, in fact, arguably, you could argue both ways, but they created, for the company itself, when they started in the 1980s and the realities of the 1980s and the 1990s and even the early 2000s, they created a system of pay that benefited the company, because if things got bad, you didn't have to pay so much to the talent. And if things got good, everybody benefited. So it created, and the mentality is that it creates an environment where you're incentivized, where you want to work hard, because if you work hard and the company does well on these house shows, you make more money. We're all in it together. So, which is the old mentality in many, many places, where we all work together and we all learn what makes money, because we got to make that money or else we're all not making money. But, you know, it's a completely different ballgame now. And now, you know, you should, you know, it should, it, there's no reason it should be any different from any other sport or Hollywood or whatever, you know, TV show or whatever. You know, you don't, you know, for the most part. And even in the old system, honest to God, unless you're like Hulk Hogan or Randy Savage, where you actually, your performance and your ability to draw really is a difference maker. For everybody else, it's like, you're not, you know, if you're fourth from the top or even second from the top and you work your ass off, it's not making a difference on the next house or anything like that. It's, you know, it's the main eventers. They're the ones who draw or don't draw. So, you know, everybody else like kind of followed along and all that. But it actually, you know, it actually really only makes sense for your money players to have that kind of, you know, incentivized stuff built in. And now, you know, even with the money players, it really doesn't make sense. So we'll see what happens.
All right, everybody. On that note, we're going to wrap it up for today. The New Observer is going to be up tomorrow, Thursday. It'll be up pretty early, so you can look forward to that. And Back Issues up. Got a lot of shows up, so check those out. Bunch of other great stuff. And that's it. We'll talk to you again after a while.